We're talking about the five operas in this season of the Santa Fe Opera, and our guest today is Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled, now in its 16th year. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Café.
Hello, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be back.
We are talking today about the opera Dr. Sun Yat-sen by the composer Huang Ruo, and please excuse my non-pronunciation of Chinese, but there we have it, ladies
Huang
and
Ruo,
gentlemen.
Yes, yes.
So this is a U.S. premiere here in Santa Fe of this opera.
It is, and it's this company is extraordinary. Again, it has introduced many brand new operas to the world, many world premieres and many American premieres, which is sort of unique because you're sticking your neck out a little bit with new operas. It used to be people would only have to hear the word new opera and they wouldn't go.
Right.
That's changing. I mean, there was a whole period of dissonant operas, dissonant scores, and people did not like that. That's changing, thank goodness. The score in this particular piece, Dr. Sun Yat-sen, is written by a Chinese composer, so you are going to get sense of Chinese music. I mean, he was reared in China. He was very fortunate, Huang Ruo, in that he was born the year the Cultural Revolution ended. Unlike some of the other Chinese composers we've presented at the Santa Fe Opera, Tan Dun and Bright Cheng, who were born into that time, separated from their parents, forbidden to listen to Western music and had to work on pig farms, all the terrible horrors that happened, did not happen to Huang Ruo. He said he was raised on Bach and the Beatles, on Eastern, Western music, and, of course, on Chinese opera. And that's all in his music. He's one of these performers who really believes that he wants to find a blend between East and West. In more ways than one, you know, music is such a universal art form that it can lead the way in many ways how to combine China and the West. I mean, it's a big question on many fronts. So this is what happens in this piece. He was asked to write an opera by the Hong Kong Opera, and the decision was to choose a piece to make a piece about Sun Yat-sen. Now, Sun Yat-sen is not someone who is taught in America. In high school.
No, this is all new to me.
It was to me too. I knew there had been an incredible individual who had changed the course of China's history. He's known as the father of the revolution. So maybe we should quickly just run through who Sun Yat-sen is before we get seriously into the opera. This young man was born in Hainan, and he's from the early days, he was a revolutionary. There had been 2,000 years of dynasties, the Manchu dynasties, the Tang dynasties, and now the Qing dynasties, who were totally autocratic, had complete control over the people with the shoguns, the warlords, and all of this. And they wanted to change this. His generation, Sun Yat-sen generation, were all educated somehow overseas. His good friend Charlie Sung was educated in the States, and he was educated in Hawaii. They both actually became Christian, one Congregationalist, the other Methodist. So that's an interesting sort of dimension that you wouldn't think. We're talking about the turn of the century here, it's the 20th century. So his life was devoted to that. He wasn't a fighter in that he wasn't a military man, and he had to spend most of his life in exile, raising money and rallying the troops, as it were, to the Chinese to put an end to the Chinese dynasties, which happened at the Xinghai Revolution in 1911. He, as it turned out, was up the road in Denver raising money for the Chinese Revolution when this happened. He wasn't even there. But when Sun Yat-sen went back immediately, which can't have been very fast in those days, if you think about it, in 1911, and was made president. But it was a short-lived presidency because soon after there was a a vote and a general became president, and things deteriorated. This general simply wanted to set up another dynasty, and Sun had to leave again. He fought. For years he fought. He raised money. There were many revolutions that didn't succeed. In 1913, they finally tried to put out this general, but China was not united. He wanted to unite this vast country. That was his dream, but he had to stay abroad. Finally, he went back and lived in the south, where he raised an army, and he put in at the head of this army, a military academy first, a young man called Chiang Kai-shek, whom we all know from history.
Right.
And his dream then was to move forth and to defeat this general and unify China. Sadly, Sun Yat-sen died before that dream could be fulfilled, and we all know what happened later. The forces under Chiang Kai-shek allied with the communist forces in Russia who were building at the time, and for a time they did unify China, but then there was a split between the two. Chiang Kai-shek went to Taiwan in 1949, and Mao Zedong was the rising communist leader in the great country of China. So that's where Sun Yat-sen fits in history. He was the father of the revolution. He's still called that by both countries, mainland China and Taiwan.
And so he is a charismatic character who was deemed a worthy subject for an opera.
Yes, and how that came about was interesting. They're looking around for a way to approach this monumental figure. It's not easy to make an opera about someone who's simply a revolutionary fundraiser. So they looked.
What's with all this fundraising business? I've never heard of anybody fundraising for a revolution.
Well, to raise money in order to fight. I mean, to make armies in order to go to fight, and to build support, to rally the people, the Chinese who were abroad, and the Chinese in China, who had always done exactly as they were told under this Qing dynasty, right down to wearing a queue. I mean, at that time, every man had to wear a queue, that pigtail. One of the first things the revolution did was get rid of it, so the people could begin to be individual people with a right to freedom. He fought for three principles: the principles of the people, nationalism, and the welfare of the people. This was the sort of revolution he was trying to bring about. He did it with the help of a man called Charlie Sung, who had also been educated abroad, who went back nominally as a minister and held fundraising events in his church for his church, but he was actually helping Sun Yat-sen. Money, he became fabulously wealthy, this man is a banker, and he was funding Sun Yat-sen and helping him in the revolutionary cause. And that scene is in the opening of the opera, actually. It opens in this church where they're fundraising, and Charlie is there. He totally believes in the ideals that Sun Yat-sen is pursuing, but halfway through the party, word comes that Sun Yat-sen is wanted and he has to leave dramatically. So I thought today a couple of things, that it would be nice to hear from the composer himself in his own words what he thinks about this opera. We can't talk to Mozart, but we can talk to Huang Ruo. And before we get to that, let's play a little section of music from this piece. Clearly, the opera has not premiered yet in the States, so we're limited as to how much music we have. And I promise you, as we speak, not now so much, but right up to the performances, things were changing. You know, the fine tuning is made, musical changes, all of that. But this hasn't changed since the first performance in 2011. This beautiful aria by Qing Ling, who is the daughter of Charlie Sung, who is to become the wife of Sun Yat-sen. Let's hear a little of her aria to get you into the sound world of Huang Ruo.
Thank you.
we're listening to music from Dr. Sun Yat-sen, and it's sung in Chinese.
Yes.
Now, opera singers have to know German and Italian and English.
French.
And French.
That's
and
a given, yes.
And we have had Russian operas, Polish operas.
Czech.
Czech, mm-hmm. But Chinese. I mean, an American mm-hmm. will have to learn enough Chinese to sing.
Yeah, that's a major challenge, and one of the great strengths of this opera company, that they'll take that on. Admittedly, many of the singers in this piece are Chinese, though the leading lady is not. She's an American. She's worked with Opera Hong Kong. She must speak the language. I haven't asked her, but that would be good to know.
Yeah.
Because this is a challenge. Mandarin, and it's at some point the Cantonese, so even two Chinese languages are part of this opera. So this gives you a little sense that this is a Western orchestra. Huang Ruo wrote the score originally for a Chinese orchestra with Chinese percussion, and that sound, which is very different, almost alien to our ears. If anyone's ever heard Chinese opera, you'll know how totally different that is to anything we've ever experienced.
Yeah, I was a little afraid before you played this that we were going to be listening to something that sounded more like Chinese opera.
Yeah, I decided not to play Chinese opera, and you know why? Because you need to see it. That's such a total art experience, too, with the costumes, the stylized gestures, the makeup,
right.
The wigs, all of that. You need to see it. So the first performance in Hong Kong in 2011 was with that sort of bass, a Chinese instrumentation. That then changed. In our production, the scoring is for a Western orchestra, but it's augmented by Chinese percussion instruments, which is necessary. Again, he wants to find that blend and balance between the two cultures musically, and does beautifully. So we're fortunate to have from the Santa Fe Opera, actually, some cuts of Huang Ruo when he was discussing this opera. I thought we might play.
Yeah.
And this one, he's asked, how did he get started? How did this whole process start?
I was approached by Opera Hong Kong roughly 6 years ago to create an opera, a new opera. So when I met up with Warren Mack, who is the artistic director, also a tenor, and he was thinking about to create something has a regional style. I proposed to Warren, I say, well, what about Dr. Sun Yat-sen? The personal story of his is so universal. What's unique about him is he tried to start revolution many, many times, as what he say, more than 10 times. But he actually never really truly succeeded in his lifetime, and he didn't see his revolution being truly bring to a successful level. And in his last singing speech or aria in an opera, he say, the true meaning of revolution is not about just being successful, but also it's about keep trying and keep improving and keep fighting for the true value of what he believes in. In his personal life, as what I talked about earlier, about his three loves, or four loves, his love for his wife, or his his two wives, and his love for his friendship, and then his love for the people and to the country. So he was trapped in a traditional marriage. He was married to Lu Muzhen, who was his first wife. And it was a very traditional marriage. They did not really know each other that much. But later on, he fell in love with his last wife, Song Qingling, who is younger than him, but they fell in love because of what they believe. And Qingling loves him because not just only he's a charming man, but also his ideology, his belief, and what he does to help people and help the country. And he loves Qingling also because she's young, but however, she is so she's so supportive to his belief and his idea. Now, his best friend, Qingling's father, Charlie Song, who has been supporting him throughout the years, and show up at the wedding without announcing, and accuse Sun Yat-sen of betrayal of the friendship. But only towards the end of the opera, when he has this private moment with his daughter on his deathbed, he revealed to her, "My true reason against the wedding is I don't want you to live a life like Sun Yat-sen does, because he's running for his life, and he never know what tomorrow is, and he might even lose his life, and I don't want to see my beloved daughter suffer." Qing Ling comfort the father and reassure her love to Sun Yat-sen is not because of a young girl's fantasy, but it's her truly believing him and believing the value of what he does. So she truly loves him. And to that, the father finally gave them his blessing and gave her the delayed wedding dress, which was meant for her all along.
So this is the composer, Huang Ruo, of Dr. Sun Yat-sen, which will have its American premiere at the Santa Fe Opera this summer. So he made a couple of references here. First of all, this wedding dress. This was a little germ of a story that started the creative process for Huang Ruo and Candace Chung, who is the librettist. Apparently, Charlie Sung had a very beautiful wedding dress made for his daughter before she was even dating anyone. This was going to be the fabulous wedding dress. But when she decided to marry Sun Yat-sen, he refused to give it to her. And it's not until the very end of the opera, it's a very touching moment, we know about this wedding dress, he then gives her the wedding dress. Charlie had three daughters, and this is in real life. Charlie Sung had Mei Ling, Ai Ling, and Sun Qing Ling. Mei Ling married Chiang Kai-shek, so they kept history in the family, as it
were.
And the older sister, Ai Ling, married a banker who actually became the first finance minister of China after all this revolution. So this was a very powerful family. After Qing Ling came back from the States, she went to she and her sisters were all educated at Wesleyan College in Georgia, can you imagine? When she returned back to China, she met Sun Yat-sen, who she sort of hero worshipped because she had known about her father's work with him all through the years. And this is 1913 when the Qing dynasty has fallen, but they are now trying to unify China. And she falls in love with both his cause and with him, but she is 26 years younger than he. And in this pivotal scene where Charlie bursts in on the wedding, which is in 1915, this scene is shown in the opera. It's a beautiful scene. They're at the home of the Umayyads. This was a Japanese couple who totally supported Sun Yat-sen and Qing Ling. And the wedding was to be in their house. And just as they are preparing for the wedding, Sun Yat-sen, who is exhausted from the struggle of the years, and this young woman who is very much in love with him, Charlie Sung, her father, bursts in. This is the great climatic operatic scene. And he denounces Sun Yat-sen. He says, "You can't marry her. You're already married." And as it happened, as a young man, there had been an arranged wedding. He was married to a country woman who had bound feet. You'll hear in this next cut, he talks about this and the sadness of this woman whom he had married and with whom he had three children and who he virtually abandoned for the cause. She could not go with him because she couldn't keep up with him in any way.
Because she couldn't walk because she had bound feet.
Yes, exactly. She belonged to that culture. And we'll be confronted by that in the opera in a very touching and meaningful way, I think. So Charlie Sung is absolutely furious. He says, "You can't do this." And he brings in Lu Muzhen, who hobbles on stage, and Sun is devastated because in his way he had loved her, but it was not a real marriage. There was no real love in this situation. So she tells him how it's been a struggle. She's raised his children. She's been alone, and she would just love to have a marriage where her husband would be there in the evening and they could talk over the candlelight. Very sweet stuff.
Which I think is so interesting because what she wanted was an ordinary man who would come home at night, and what Qing Ling's father wanted for her was the same thing.
Exactly, exactly. But she then amazes everyone by the end of this discussion with him. And you'll hear Huang Ruo talks about this and the intimacy he achieves through language at this point. But at the end of the scene, she hands Sun Yat-sen his divorce papers so that he can marry Qing Ling. And that scene, a very tumultuous scene, ends as she leaves the stage and Sun Yat-sen and Qing Ling turn to face the pastor who's going to marry them. So it's a touching moment. But let's first play a little from near the end. He referred to this at the very end of the opera. There has been an assassination attempt. Sun Yat-sen escaped, but they were separated. He and Qing Ling were separated, and she's pregnant. She managed to make it home. This is years after the split and the marriage. She gets home, and her father welcomes her with open arms. He's missed this daughter, and the very thing he dreaded, the horror of the lifestyle she's leading as a revolutionary's wife, even though he was president for a time, assassination attempts, and even it caused the loss of the child. She lost the child in the course of the fleeing, and they are reunited at the end, the father, the mother, and the daughter. So this is about that love. Love on many levels in this opera. Huang Ruo believes in that. Love of man and woman, husband, wife, family, friends, country. And they don't always work together, it turns out. Sometimes they can be in conflict. So maybe we can just play a little from the final duet where father and daughter are reunited.
And that was music from the opera Dr. Sun Yat-sen. We're talking to Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled, about the opera Dr. Sun Yat-sen. And very much as we heard in the music excerpt that you played a few minutes ago, very much of a kind of bicultural sound.
Yes, there is. It's accessible, which is what people sometimes think contemporary opera is not going to be. The music is very accessible, very heartfelt, but it does have this overlay of Chinese instruments, which make it very, very appealing. In a different context, and yet we can totally identify with what's going on in the story because these are human stories. Apart from Lu Muzhen, the woman with the bound feet, I did a little research on that and put it into my book. Yeah. What that meant. In fact, the one great thing that Mao Zedong did in China was absolutely, finally, once and for all, put an end to that custom, because through centuries, different people had tried, governments had tried to stop this barbaric custom. It continued. It continued in the rural areas, and he finally put a stop to that. It could no longer happen. But we're here.
And it's very interesting if you Google this or look for the images of what that looked like when a bound foot person's, what happens to their anatomy, what happens to their actual feet. It's
so barbaric. And you know how big,
horrible.
How these feet
were. You can see it.
They were 3 to 4 inches long, yeah. Marisha. I was so appalled when I saw that. And then they're covered in these very ornate, very beautiful little booty things, but that they virtually could not walk. Yeah. And the mothers would bind the feet. You know, the mothers would do this to their daughters from a very young age. It's extraordinary. It started back with an emperor who asked his leading concubine to bind her feet and dance, and he said the gold, she danced as if she floated across the golden lotus. And the women of the court thought, oh, well, we'll emulate this and we'll all have small feet. In our culture, small feet doesn't really have much of certainly not a sexual connotation, I don't think. I mean, small feet are pretty. Dancers' feet are always fairly small. Though if you take those pretty shoes off, they're pretty gross underneath sometimes. So it's a specifically Chinese thing that's very hard for us to understand. But it was something that the Chinese people did not easily let go of. It's barbaric. Rather, as you read about the horrifying customs that happen to girls in Africa today.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why do people do this, and why do the mothers go along?
It's just the ultimate,
uh-huh.
I mean, both of those things are the ultimate disempowerment.
Yeah, of women, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of them, you can't feel your own sexuality. The other, you can't ever escape or move.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a way of being trapped and held in one place. Yeah. So luckily, I don't think we ever had, and did we ever have anything of equal horror? I don't think so. But anyway, this is in the opera. So again, you know, I love opera for this. You are taken into places and worlds and cultures that you would never dream of delving into. I mean, I never researched bound feet until I had to do this opera.
Yeah, next time we'll talk about corsets.
Yes, they're right. You see, we did do that. And that actually, Gone with the Wind, I remember one of the greatest scenes is where she's going to that party, Vivian Leigh, and she's being tight. I mean, the bones of that corset to give her a 16-inch waist. How did she breathe?
Yeah.
She clearly wasn't a singer.
Or eat.
or anything, exactly.
So let's go on. We have another clip of an interview with the composer.
Yes, let's play that. And he'll tell us the story in his own words.
While Sun Yat-sen is having a very modest wedding in Japan with his new wife, Song Qingling, and to everyone's surprise, Charlie Song, Qingling's father, and his mother, Ni, both show up unannounced, and Charlie accused Sun Yat-sen of betrayal of friendship and tried to stop the wedding. And at the end, to everyone's surprise even, and he said, you actually still have a marriage and you are illegally marrying my daughter because you already married to someone else back in China, and let's have Lu Muzhen. So, and then at that point, his first wife, Lu Muzhen, walked on stage slowly with her bound feet. So Sun Yat-sen was very shocked. Not only his friend, the father, his in-law, show up, but also he brought his first wife. Now, Lu Muzhen is a character I spent a lot of time to think about how to portray her. And she is someone you feel great pity for her because she, at the end, didn't get anything. She was married to a great man. However, the great man abandoned her and went for another woman. And she has to be left to raise their children and to support, even take care of his own parents. She is telling Sun Yat-sen, my dear husband, I haven't seen you for so many years. How have you been? Have you been well? You know, it's not even how are you, but have you been well? So, and he said, I'm ashamed. I am not feeling well because I have not visit home for so many years. And then she start listing out his wrongdoing, you know. When the children were born, he was not there. When his own parents were sick, she was the one to take care of them instead of him. And she does everything to raise and support the family while she give him the freedom to fight for what he believes. And so at the end, she actually being very understanding to him, and to even to everyone's bigger surprise, she delivered the signed divorce paper to him. Before she leave, she is creating an imaginary dream, singing, I wish in my next life, if I come back to the world, I would love to marry a regular, a normal man who, when I wake up, is sleeping next to me and waking up together. Now, one thing I do want to point out is this opera is not only written in Mandarin, but also one section is written in Cantonese. So I use this section for Lu Muzhen, the first wife, when he has the most intimate moment, talking to Sun Yat-sen at the wedding, telling him she is willing to set him free. For me, that is the most intimate moment. And it's the most special moment also, because they both from Canton. So the language they will speak to each other in that setting, I'm sure is Cantonese. And that is so private, no one else should hear, because all other people speak Mandarin. And that's what opera could bring out, is this subtle and detailed feeling, emotion, and drama, where no other art form could bring out.
And that's a beautiful thing to look for when you're listening to when you're watching the opera and listening to it, mm-hmm. to see if you can hear that change of sound and change of tone.
Yes, yes, and the intimacy that it suggests. Though hearing it from him, you know now to look for it, because that's something that we probably would have all have missed. But what a wonderful thing to do in the middle of this wedding scene where there's been this crisis is to have the groom-to-be talking with his first wife in another language. It sets them apart. It's really interesting how that's staged. So I'd like to play one little last section of music, since there's not a lot of music I can play for this opera, since we haven't, there is no recording at the moment. It's an aria of Sun Yat-sen's, and the librettist Candace Chung talked about this. She said, you know, how do you put words into the mouth of a man like Sun Yat-sen, who was an extraordinary speaker? So they decided to take his words and put them into the aria, which makes total sense. In this particular aria, it comes at the very end of the opera. He doesn't take credit for what has happened, for the revolution, the fact that they are winning. He credits the people for that, and he talks about his dreams for a unified China in his own words. This came from a speech he delivered just 2 years before his death. It's a very affecting moment, and maybe we could play a little of that. And actually, the point here, too, is that the words, part of the words in this aria from his speech, are part of the words of the Chinese national anthem. Amazing.
Very interesting.
You hook up all these bits and pieces. So let's hear just a little of Sun Yat-sen's aria from the end of the opera.
We're listening to music from the opera Dr. Sun Yat-sen. We're talking with Desiree Mays about the Santa Fe Opera production. Now, this is an opera premiering. The U.S. premiere is here in Santa Fe this summer. What's it going to look like? Tell us a little bit about the production that we'll see if we go to this opera.
There's a very beautiful set, actually. It's sort of made of bamboo, so immediately you're sort of cast into that Eastern feel. And the opening scene, which is set in Shanghai, is open to the back sky. So you have these sort of structures of bamboo, but you can see the sunsets through the back. And then they bring in very beautiful Japanese screens that will close off the sunset, so that suddenly then you can be in Japan. And there's a sense of sort of the running water that you get in the Japanese design of homes. At one point, there are the terracotta heads of the great army that fell, the last of the dynasties. The suggestion is that they are now cut down and in the dust. The bamboo structure, though, stays throughout the piece. It works on different layers, as different levels, two or three, that the performers can use. But there's always in building, and there's a sense that even though the opera has ended, the work needs to go on, that the construction of China, and that was Sun Yat-sen's belief. It wasn't just about winning the revolution. Success was necessary, and sadly he died before he saw that success. But it was what happened afterwards, how things would work out afterwards.
Which is an ongoing story.
Exactly. There's a relevance to all of that. I mean, the evolution of these revolutions, and what revolution, when it happens, if it's successful or not, is one thing. It's what happens afterwards and how the people are affected. And his desire was for the people to have freedom and equality across the board, across that vast country. So this is a production that was commissioned in Hong Kong by Warren Mok, a Chinese tenor who is the artistic director there. But he also sang Sun Yat-sen at the premiere in Hong Kong in 2011. And he will be here, Mary Charlotte, to sing Sun Yat-sen in Santa Fe. In fact, we have a number of Chinese singers. Charlie Sung, his supporter, is sung by Dong Yang Gong. Mr. Amaya by Chen Yi Wan. The character that stands out as not being Chinese is Sung Ching Ling, the wife of Sun Yat-sen. She is sung by Corinne Winters. She's a graduate of Philadelphia's vocal program, and she has sung all over the world with English National Opera at St. Louis and Opera Hong Kong, so she had that connection there.
It'll be so interesting if you have a chance, Desiree, this summer to interview some of the singers, or if they come on this program, to really talk about what it's like to sing a tonal language in an opera format.
Exactly. So that's something maybe we can set up for sometime in the summer. The conductor is Carolyn Kwan. She is Chinese and is currently the music director at the Hartford Symphony Orchestra. So predominantly Chinese cast and production team. James Robertson is the director. He has done a number of productions here. He did The Last Savage with us here. So
that
again,
was a beautiful production.
It was, yeah. So there's a wonderful blend of East and West in both the production and the singers who are performing.
Now, this is the U.S. premiere. When did it premiere in China, and has it traveled to other parts of the world?
It was to have premiered in China, but at very short notice, it was cancelled for reasons that are not really clear by great fortuitous luck, I suppose. It was scheduled for its second performances to be in Hong Kong. So when the Chinese decided not to present the work, Hong Kong did. So the premiere was in Hong Kong in 2011, and this is the next reincarnation. And probably that's a good word, because with every new opera, the first time out of the gate, no one really knows what they've got until it's up there. The whole thing is complete with the orchestra and an audience to see where the strengths and the weaknesses lie. So in those 2 years, there's time to rework what needs doing. That has happened with Oscar. Oscar was a great piece last year, but there were pieces that could do with fine-tuning, and that will happen. And next spring, Oscar will be presented in Philadelphia with those changes. So we will have the American premiere with those refinements in place.
Of course, it's interesting because, I mean, if you're playing it for the first time to Asian audiences and then bringing it to American audiences, our frame of reference is so different.
It is, but again, he's trying to bring that East-West whole thing together. Huang Ruo was first at Oberlin and then Juilliard, the great Juilliard, which produces all these amazing young artists. In fact, there's a whole stable, if you like, of wonderful young Chinese-American composers. We had Bright Cheng came here to compose Madame Mao, and the great Tan Dun, do I have time for a little funny story
yes.
about Tan Dun? Tan Dun presented Tea, A Mirror of Soul here. It was
yes,
a beautiful
we had
piece.
Him on the air. And,
that's right,
and
that's right.
Many people saw that opera, which was very interesting.
Very meditative.
In terms of the way the instruments were
yes,
and the whole production.
Yeah, beautiful. And then he wrote The Last Emperor, which played at the Metropolitan Opera. So the story goes that Tan Dun, when he came first to the States, he had a scholarship to go to Juilliard, but really no money to live on. So he did what a lot of his friends did. They played in the subway stations in New York. Never look down on those musicians. I mean, they need support and they're these kind of students. So he played and he made friends and then went on to become the great Tan Dun. And on his way, apparently, to one of the performances of the Metropolitan Opera a couple of years back, he's riding the subway on his way to conduct, I think, and he meets one of his old friends from the subway days who says, oh, you know, Tan Dun, how are things going? You still playing? He said, yeah. And he said, where are you playing? He said, Lincoln Center. He said, oh, you're in the subway? He said, no, in the Metropolitan Opera. Is that great? Something
amazing.
Along those lines. So that can happen. I mean, the American dream, I suppose, the Chinese dream, certainly, to be able to come to this country with nothing, and end up here. So Tan Dun is a prolific composer. He does a lot of good stuff.
Including the soundtrack to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and things like that.
Mm. And there's a justice here because both he and Bright Cheng were subject to the horrors of the Cultural Revolution in China and managed to survive, first of all, and then make it out and make major careers. And they're welcomed back home, which is nice too. So I encourage people to see this. It's a fascinating piece. And it seen with the rest of the season, the Santa Fe Opera certainly covers all the bases.
Now, the opera, Dr. Sun Yat-sen, is being performed only 4 times this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. So be sure to check the schedule on santafeopera.org, ladies and gentlemen. And we have to remind people also that because the opera house is open air, the curtain times, the beginning of the opera, is at different times depending on when the sunset is. And so it's earlier in the summer and then, I mean, it's the opening time is later, earlier in the summer.
That's right. And we used to do our shows at 9 o'clock, you know, and locally people had a fit. I mean, 9 o'clock, you won't be out at 1 in the morning.
I liked that.
I did too. It wasn't a problem. But and I think it has made a big difference. The curtain time now is 8:30 from June 27, the opening night, through July 26th. And then from July 28th to the end of the season on August 23rd, it's 8 o'clock, which makes it very manageable. I mean, you're out. With any of these operas, you'll be out between 8 o'clock and midnight, which is not too bad. So, and then if you're planning to go back to Santa Fe, you can take the shuttle and sleep.
Exactly. And, of course, you are doing the preview buffets beforehand. And
that's right. There's plenty to do at the theater. If you go up early, have a tailgate party. If you go to Stearin Hall, you have a ticket to the show, you can hear a preview talk or make a real night of it and come to the Dapples Pavilion and have dinner. They're lovely preview dinners, and it's quite beautiful down there. There's gardens surrounding where we dine, and dinner is delicious. There's wine served with it, and I'll give an overview at the end of the dinner.
And if you make a whole day of it almost, or a sort of afternoon, evening, night of it.
You could do that.
It's a real experience. It becomes a way to truly escape from your life, whatever that might be at the moment.
And right, right. And I've had a number of young people come to the cantina and say, oh, I had no idea what this was going to be like, but it's absolutely magical. It's a great way to bring people to opera.
Desiree Mays, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We've been talking to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled. She speaks every night at the preview buffet at the opera. The Santa Fe Opera is on the web at santafeopera.org, and the phone number is 800-280-4654, And the local number is 505-986-5900.